That's February 12th, 2025. The Magha Puja is the evening that the full moon of February, or the full moon of Magha, and not too long after the Buddha's awakening, after his enlightenment, that he gave this teaching to 1,250 arhants. So it's a very unusual, very interesting teaching that, well, the teaching itself is not unusual. It's very basic and practical, but it's unusual that he gave it to arhants. We thought maybe arhants, they're fully enlightened already. They finished their practice. They're fully liberated. They don't need to hear any teachings. It's the Buddha actually laying out the fundamentals of the holy life and just distilling it into just these basic principles of sabbapapasa akaranang. That's the refraining from evil, refraining from the unwholesome. And then kusala supasampada, that's the lifting up of the good, or the cultivation of what is good. Sacitta pariyodhapanang, the purification of one's mind, or the cleansing of one's mind. Etang buddha nasasanang, that's all the Buddhas teach this. And this is, you could also, another alternate translation is, this is all the Buddhas teach. This is what they teach. And it can be distilled or compressed or just summarized in that way, that these very basic principles. And then the teaching goes on that kanti paramang tapotitika, this one phrase, I would say, encapsulates most of the teachings in the Thai forest tradition of Buddhism, and that the Kruba Ajahns emphasize that one phrase, perhaps even, maybe not more, but it's really, really highly emphasized in the teachings. I'm not sure whether they emphasize that one more or the following of the training standards, the Vinaya. But these two, they do reinforce each other. So that's the kanti paramang tapotitika, kanti parami. And this is a patient endurance. In Thai, we say otton. So that this is the thing that helps us to overcome the defilements, the thing that burns up the defilements or gets rid of the defilements, just that sense of patient endurance. And patient endurance, that's how we translate it in English. It's perhaps not the best translation, because otton, or just the word kanti in Pali, it's more like the ability to bear with things without giving rise to anger and aversion. Things when things don't go our way, for example, when adverse situations happen, we get sick, or we get hurt, or we get injured, or we experience something like loss. We experience loss of money, loss of loved ones, loss of status, loss of reputation. When we experience those things, then that quality of otton, or that quality of kanti, is what is needed. It's that ability to bear with the unpleasant, to bear with the unpleasant in a way that we can be with it. We can be mindful. We can develop a sense of being okay with things when there's adverse conditions. That's an important quality in the practice. Of course, the ultimate level of this comes up in the sutta on the simile of the saw, where when the Buddha actually perfected his kanti parami, the perfection of patience, the perfection of kanti, was in a past life where he actually had all of his limbs savagely sawn off with these hand saws, and then claimed that even then he still didn't give rise to any thoughts of anger. that was his perfection of patience, even in one of the most extreme circumstances you could imagine, still not giving rise to anger. And that was a quality that was necessary for him to develop in order to attain Buddhahood eventually. For us, we don't have to go to that extent, but it's a good reflection. We don't have to experience things like torture and extreme misfortune in order to develop patient endurance. Although almost every human being within the course of their life will experience torture at some point. If it's not some sort of physical torture, then we might experience mental torture where things don't go our way and it's just everything just seems to cave in. Our whole life can fall apart just like that. Things can seem to be going well and then everything just falls apart. Things don't go our way. And that can be torture. That's mental torture. That's mental hell. So that's in the mind and the heart. The mind and the heart can be in hell, even if our body is physically healthy and okay. Then there's various ways that we make ourselves suffer and even torture ourselves. Or we might experience some sort of trauma, a breakup of a relationship, or if we have children, they might not act in a way that we expect or would like them to act. So this can be torture for us. So that quality of Kanti, again, if we just very simplify it into not giving rise to aversion or not giving rise to anger, or if the mind does give rise to anger, then being able to find ways to dispel it quickly. This is what Kanti is. This is what we talk about with Oton in the Thai sense of the word. So just that one phrase, the Kanti Paramang Tapo Titika. Tapa or Tapo, that's the fire, the spiritual fire. Normally when the Buddha talked about tapas, he talked about wanting to put out the fires of greed, hatred, and delusion. But in this sense, when he's talking about Kanti, he's actually developing a spiritual fire that burns up the defilements. So this is the type of fire we do want to be cultivating. And so many things can happen in our lives, that so many difficulties, so much pain, so much suffering. And I remember talking with a group of people a while back, and some people bringing up this sense of, well, having experienced trauma in their life. And the more people I meet or the more people I talk to, I think that actually trauma is quite normal. Almost everybody's experienced some trauma in their lives, even to the point where I thought maybe you could even translate dukkha as trauma, that we're experiencing either lesser or greater trauma on a daily basis. So they even have this word in Thai. They say trauma. This word, like I was trauma, Ajahn. Like I got trauma. So they, even in Thai, they have this word, and they've taken words like guilty. I feel guilty. But maybe in English, it's not quite the same as the Thai people have taken it on. But still, it's something normal. So we consider trauma as actually something normal. And that quality of patient endurance is going to help us to overcome all types of suffering, all types of trauma. And when we cultivate the quality of Kanti, one sign that we've cultivated it is that the mind is very cool and peaceful. And it's a sense of coolness and peace which is very, very refreshing. And it's not like a strong ecstasy or bliss, but it's extremely delightful and really, really just, there's a sense of mental comfort when we're able to have patient endurance. It's even like the Chinese saying, patient person is always happy. So whatever situation we're in, if we're able to, and patient endurance comes together with mindfulness as well. So when we're able to be fully present for anything that's happening, even if it's not nice, even if it's something unpleasant, there can be a sense of refreshment and the heart is cool and there's a sense of no worries and things are okay enough. And I think I really got this feeling when I first read Lompo Cha's teachings, when I first developed faith in the practice and in the Buddha's teaching. It was through reading Lompo Cha's teachings. And there was a certain feeling I got when I read Lompo Cha's teachings that I didn't get from reading any other teachings. So I had read teachings of some Hindu teachings. I'd read some Christian teachings, spiritual teachers, different spiritual teachers, having read their teachings. And I thought they were quite good. But when I read Lompo Cha, there was something different about it. And it's very hard to put into words what that was. Now I think of it as the Aryan energy. It was like contacting something that was fundamentally different from all the other teachings. And on the surface, Lompo Cha's teachings look similar to other spiritual teachings. But then as I read Lompo Cha and started to get a feeling for Lompo Cha, there was something different. And the difference was when I started to contemplate Lompo Cha's teachings and get a feel for his teachings, there was this coolness in the heart. Everything was very cool. There was a sense of there's no need to worry. Everything's okay in the moment, and we can endure. No matter how difficult things get, we can endure. No matter how bad the mental defilements get, we can endure. One of the things that struck me about Lompo Cha's teachings was that he was very humble about his own path of practice, and he was very honest and open about his mistakes that he made. And they're the same mistakes that we're all going to make in the course of the practice. And some of us have made those mistakes, and some of us, if we're just starting out, there's going to be inevitable failures and mistakes. And so Ajahn Chah had defilements in his mind, just like the rest of us, and he had great anger that he had to work with and overcome. And he had great greed and just other defilements that he had to overcome. This came through just, in the end, it was endurance. It wasn't really applying any other practice other than just enduring. And when Lompo Cha was asked later in his life what were the qualities that caused him to succeed in his practice, he said there was two. One was otton, the kwam otton, the patient endurance, kanti barami. And the other quality was the picharana anichang, the contemplation of impermanence or the contemplation of uncertainty. So those two things. And those really go together as well. And any of us who have endured difficulties and been able to overcome our own aversion to situations that we don't like, and if we've experienced even a little bit of that coolness of heart, that gives rise to a quality that we call saddha. So that's faith, confidence. Yeah. In Thai, they say kwam luam sai, give like a sense of confidence or steadiness when we reflect on these things. And we experience that coolness of heart, and we think, there's something here. I'm going to make a lot of that, make much of that. So that gives us a glimpse into the Aryan energy, the feeling of what it's like to be in the presence of the noble ones, the feeling of what it's like to be in the presence of these great teachers, these ajahns. So Lompo Cha, and another thing that's just totally amazing to me is, you know, we have the Buddha who lived almost 2,600 years ago. So that's a long time. But then over time, there's been students of his and then who have actually cultivated and realized the teachings and done these very same practices. They all had to endure in just the same way that we will have to. And then down to these great masters that we hear about, Tanajan Mun and Tanajan Cha and so on. We hear about these masters, and they've passed away as well, and they had to go through the same things that we're all going through and having to go through. They all went through those same things. Longpu Man, Tanajan Mun, had to endure great hardships, great difficulties through the course of his practice. And it was through those difficulties that he actually realized the Dhamma and became the master that he was, and was able to teach his own great disciples and great students. And it's through the difficulties that Tanajan Cha endured that he actually was able to become the great master that he was, the great Krupa Ajahn that he was. If these greats of the past were just able to take it easy, I don't think it would have been the same. Their biographies would not have been as inspiring, and they wouldn't have been able to develop patient endurance. So we can take this a step further then and say that actually, when there's difficulties, that's good. That's a good thing. It's good in terms of the practice. If it's too easy, it's not good. So, we have very nice facilities here at Abhayagiri, and things are more comfortable now. You could say that things are more comfortable now than they were when the monastery first started. So when the monastery first started, there was just a little house and the garage, which became the Dhamma Hall, which is now the dining hall. And there was one toilet for the community. So that had to be shared. So people had to endure those basic unpleasant feelings, just waiting for the bathroom to become available. So, and that's good. That's good. That can have a brightening quality, that sense of having to endure and just having to be patient, and just these basic things, these basic bodily functions, that's something that can help our practice. And the kitchen, the original kitchen was so small that you could fit three people in it if you tried. That's so much different now with the bigger kitchen. But then having a bigger kitchen brings up different difficulties. So when with the saying, there's too many cooks in the kitchen. So that's when you have more people in the kitchen, then you might have more views and opinions about the way things should be done. So in some ways, things were more difficult back then. In some ways, they're more difficult now. And the difficulties just change their form. But if it gets too comfortable, it's like Lumpur Cha would say, "Sabai di mai?" And when people answered "Sabai di," sometimes he would say, "Sabai di mai di." "Sabai di mai di." So that means it's a bit too comfortable. So we might not develop in the practice so much if it's a bit too comfortable. So sometimes we push ourselves, but we push ourselves within our limits. Something that Longpa Liam would teach quite a bit when the times I got to live at Wat Nongpopong, he would teach about that humans are actually very, very adaptable, and it's totally amazing the difficulties and the circumstances that human beings can adapt to. But we tend to not adapt unless we're forced to. And we might hear stories or read about stories of these old Tudong monks who had these experiences, like walking through the jungle and standing at the foot of a tree because it gets dark and they haven't found a place to camp, and then it starts raining and they just stand in the rain all night. They might have their glot umbrella over them, but it's raining so hard that they just can't stay dry and they just have to stand in the rain all night. We think, I would die if that, that would be so horrible. But actually, I think anybody here could do that. But we're not going to be able to do it just by going and standing out in the rain all night. It only happens when we're actually in that circumstance and we can't do anything about it. And in 2014, I remember going on a short Tudong walk a couple weeks north of Abhayagiri, but it was after the Vasa, and it happened to be a really, really a lot of rain. So the first couple of days there was sun and the weather was nice. And then about day three, it started raining. And so we were walking in the rain and we had some like ponchos. We didn't have umbrellas, but we had these like rain ponchos that doubled as our small tents. And there was one day where we walked for about 6 hours in the rain. It was quite cold and a lot of our things got wet. And then for the next week, we had this experience of getting rained on. And there was one night where we were under our little tents in a little redwood grove, and both of us had to just sit up all night because it was raining. And the tents we had were so small that the water, and they were homemade, we had made them here, and they didn't have any bottoms on them. So, you know, we would just be sitting on the ground on a little mat. And it was raining enough that the water was just kind of creeping in, and kind of we're kind of each under our tents, just kind of huddled in the center of these tents. And throughout the night, hey, are you doing okay? Yeah, I'm okay. And then he'd be like an hour later, how are you doing? How are you doing? Yeah, I'm all right. So we'd be talking to each other, maybe from me, Taj, and Sudhiro. We had our tents set up in this redwood grove, and finally, kind of, and we're kind of going in and out of sleep, but kind of in a sitting up position. And then dawn came, and we were able to pack up our tents and start walking back toward the monastery. And then when we got back to the monastery, and I went back to my kuti, and it was so nice. And it was still raining. And I went into my kuti, and I had the heater on, and it was dry, and it was warm. And I remember it was, because it was still cold, and it was still raining. So I was dry and warm in the kuti, and then I went out on the front deck, and I was watching the rain, and I was thinking, gosh, there's no way I could go out in that rain. Wait, I just did that a few days ago. I was literally out in that rain all night, and it was really uncomfortable, but it was fine. It was okay. It was bearable. So sometimes we don't know what we can do until we actually are in a situation where we're forced to do something. And that's great. That's great that we can recollect that. And when I was in that warm kuti, I couldn't even force myself to go out into that rain. But just 3 or 4 days before that, I was huddled under a little thin tent, getting wet and really cold and uncomfortable in a redwood grove in the rain, not really able to do anything about it. And it was totally okay. So that's not because I have any particular quality of toughness, but it's just being forced to be in that situation. And the mind has a way of letting go when it's in those types of situations. So I guess we do need a little bit of training, though, before we do that. We do need some training, or else we might, you don't want to panic or something when you're in a situation like that. But if you have some training in the practice, then the mind will go towards peace. The mind will take refuge in peace. The mind will go towards calming down. The mind will go toward, okay, there's nothing I can do. I'm not going to worry about it. So that's what we're talking about when we're cultivating Kanti. The next line is Nibbanang Paramang Vadanti Buddha. The Buddhas say Nibbana is supreme. Nibbana is the highest happiness. So this is really also connected with that Kanti Parami, the Nibbana. Nibbana means to become cool. So that coolness of heart that we might experience a little bit of, you could call it a contact high that we might get if we're around these great Krupa Ajahns like Lompo Cha or Lompa Liam or any of the other great Ajahns that, say, Lompo Pasano, we have the candles, flowers, and incense for him that we'll sit there. Lompo Pasano is in England right now, but that's what draws us to the practice. So kind of that contact high from, we get that coolness of heart temporarily and think, wow, what if I could cultivate that for myself? That would be amazing. So recognizing that Nibbana is the highest happiness. There is an interesting sutta, which I'm unable to quote chapter and verse, unfortunately, but where the Buddha says, if one doesn't believe Nibbana is the highest happiness that there is, one cannot attain it. So that's straightening our views out. If we think, oh, there's probably something in the world that's better than Nibbana. You know, if I get rich or if I become famous or whatever, there might be, or get the conditions just right, get everything just right, that might be better than Nibbana. But if we really reflect on things, then we see Nibbana is the highest happiness, the Dhamma, the letting go, the sense of no worries. Then once we're convinced that that's the highest happiness, then the mind can really go toward it. The mind can incline in that direction. Then the Buddha goes on to explain about various ways of being in our life, being kind, being humble, not being harsh with people, not harming, not insulting, not injuring. So this is Nahipa bhojito paru pagati samano hoti parang he tayanto. That's like a one who hurts others, one who injures others, can't be called a monk, can't be called a samana, can't be called a religious seeker. Anupawado, anupagato, patimoke chasangwaro. So that's restrained according, there's a sense of training. Restrained according to training rules, training standards, precepts, whether it's the 5 precepts, the 8 precepts, 10, or the 227, or more than that, then living according to a sense of guidelines, a sense of principles. In Thai, we call this the luktam, that principle of Dhamma that we live by. Matan yuta chapata saming, that's knowing the right measure in food or consumption. So knowing the right measure in things. Matanyuta, that's the knowing what's just right, knowing what's just enough. You know, like today, the food was so good and there was so much food that I took too much. I put too much in my bowl. It was, that's what we say, the eyes were bigger than the stomach. So unfortunately, I wasted a little bit of food today. I wasn't actually able to eat it all. So knowing the right measure is when we know, okay, I know I'm going to need just that much. And then the Buddha goes on to talk about just seeking seclusion and cultivating the higher mind. So seeking seclusion, the translation that we chanted tonight is retreating to a lonely place, which sounds a little bit sad, but it's seclusion, the cultivation of seclusion. When we really cultivate seclusion, we won't feel lonely. So I don't know about this translation of lonely place. We don't want to find a lonely place. The loneliness is a kind of sense of alienation, but seclusion, there's a sense of fullness, a sense of connection, actually. Sometimes we might feel more lonely in a large group of people than we feel when we're in seclusion. Sometimes we might feel when we're completely alone by ourselves, there's no loneliness at all. So loneliness is not dependent on whether we're around people or not around people, but it's seeking that sense of connection with oneself. And if we're able to have that connection with ourselves, connection with our own heart, with our own mind, then it's not going to be dependent on anybody else. It's not going to be dependent on any external situation. So it's just these basic things, just being kind, knowing the right measure with things, taking time for oneself, keeping precepts, patiently enduring adverse conditions when they arise, cultivating the good, relinquishing the bad, purifying the mind. These are what the Buddhas teach. Those are the principles that the Buddhas teach. And all of us can do this. It's really amazing that from the time of the Buddha down till now, say that there was a time when Tanajan Mun was young, there was a time when he was a layperson, there was a time when he ordained, and there was a time when he had to practice and endure, and then he realized the teachings and he was able to pass that on to his own students. And with Ajahn Chah, it's the same, able to pass it on to his own students. And then everybody keeps aging, the generations keep moving forward, time keeps rolling on and on like a wheel. So now here we are, we're aging as well. So it's really up to us to keep these teachings alive, and they're kept alive through that sense of just being able to endure whatever arises, being able to be with whatever arises. So I think that's appropriate for the amount of time that we have this evening, and I'll leave it there for these reflections for this evening.